Okay, so before we get started today, do you guys have any questions on what we've covered so far that might be able to address? Yes, sir. Well, it needs to be a PDF, all a single PDF when you submit it, but in terms of like section by section, no. I think the easier, that'll be true for homework and on exams, the easier you can make it for someone else to follow, right? I think it will make it easier for me to help you in terms of giving you feedback and giving you partial credit on exams. But also, I think that helps you guys if you're kind of a little bit more organized and methodical. So I guess that's the answer. Yes, sir. You're welcome to, so the question, can I just scan it, right? You're welcome to do that, write it out by paper. If you are, you have an iPad or some kind of other tablet and want to do it directly digitally, feel free to do that too. I just need to get a PDF, however you want to do it. If you don't know by now, there's plenty of free apps, both on iOS and Android. They'll let you scan, bundle those images into a single PDF. If you can't figure that out, just bounce me a message. We can walk through it. But it's there's plenty of those out there, a lot of them pretty good and free, actually. Other questions? All right, so we're going to start off today working an example. So let me draw up what we're going to talk about, the system. So we have this guy right here. So we have a rod, rigid, inextensible, inflexible rod, massless, and of length L. About a perfect pen, it's connected to ground. There is a point mass M. It's top in the configuration shown here. Is attached at some height. We can define that so we're all on the same page at least. Let's call that distance where from the pin to where the spring attaches A. Okay, so we have a total rod length L, and then this length is A. We have a spring constant K attached to that point to attach to ground. The rotation of the rod from vertical, let's call it theta. And again, we have a perfect pen there, so no friction, et cetera. All right. So what I'd like you to do, and we'll do this kind of throughout the semester every so often, is take 5 minutes to just set up the problem, and then we can get some instant feedback. We'll go over it on the board. So that way you kind of get instant feedback on your process. So what we're looking for, equations of motion. So 120 by that clock. We'll come back together and go through it. Okay, where do we start? Free body diagram, that is a good place to start for sure. Okay, what kind of forces do we have? We have some gravity on the mass, right? Spring force, I'm just going to call that force spring for right now. What else? Yeah, some reaction forces. Let's call it Rx, Ry for right now. Okay, what's next? Yeah, I would recommend to explicitly define coordinate system. What makes sense here? An X and Y, maybe like such. And we'll call the pen the origin of the axis 0.0. All right, what's next? Another kind of preliminary step, maybe, before we even get to forming equations of motion. Perhaps. What? So we have a coordinate system. We get to choose something else about what we're going to use to describe the system. Well, we kind of have that embedded here. So positive y is up there. We get to pick our generalized coordinate effectively. Even if we're using Newton-Euler, I think it's a good idea to make that choice explicit. We're going to describe the motion of the system in terms of this theta. Right? We could just as easily describe it in terms of that angle if we wanted. Right? And you have that choice. Right? So again, I think that's one thing that's kind of a preliminary step, but it's often helpful, particularly as problems get more complex, to make that an explicit choice. Right? And as the problems get more complex, making a nice choice there, an intelligent choice there, can make the math part of the problem simpler. So in this case, I think theta makes some sense. Right. So that's probably why you didn't think a whole lot here. So we can say, well, and we only have one because we have 1 degree of freedom. Okay, what's our next choice we have to make, perhaps? Rather, we want to use Newton-Euler or Lagrange or some other method. Right. And you guys primarily are learning Newton-Euler and Lagrange. How many of you guys went Newton-Euler? Hands up. Most of you guys did Lagrange? How many of you didn't get that far? Okay, that's fine. So let's do it both ways. Let's start Newton-Euler. And again, I think this is a good way to work problems, is to take the same problem and work it both ways. And that's really the only way you're going to start developing some intuition about which way is easier, which way works for the way you think, right? You should get the same answer, as we'll see. Okay? So if I'm going to choose, and we're going to start with Newton-Euler, what do I need to do? I got some kind of rotational motion here, so I'm probably going to have some kind of moment equation I need to worry about. If I'm thinking about a moment equation, there's a choice embedded in that, which is, where am I going to sum moments about? What's a good point here? Point O. Why is point O a good spot to sum moments about? We have pure rotation about that point. And then also, because we're in pure rotation, it kind of lets us ignore these reaction forces. They have kind of zero moment arm on that body for something around that point. So I think that's a good choice. We're going to sum moments about O. Okay. What are the moments about point O? We have some moment that's coming from the spring force. We have some moment coming from gravity. How do I figure out what those are? Yeah, those cross products. Okay. So I want to take, let's say, R... positive. I take each force, so I go from O to where that force is being applied, is this displacement vector, cross with the force and make sure you get the direction right. And you do that for every force you have along that body, or bodies. When we get to chapter 4. Okay, so there's some things in here we don't know yet. Let's walk down the... And maybe I'll make that explicit too. I did SP for that point there. I'm calling SP for spring. Okay, so the position of that point relative to point O is what? Well, it's A along this bar. What is it? We need to write it in some coordinate frame, though. Okay. That's right. Okay. Yep. Minus a sine theta in the I direction, right? So it's negative I and positive j. And you probably can guess that that guy follows a similar form. It just goes all the way up to L instead of just A. Okay. We also don't know what this guy is right now. What is that spring force? K delta. Right, that's right. I think that's the place to start thinking about it. So it's K delta. And we're going to say, hey, that spring is unstretched when theta is zero. I'm not getting any, given any information telling us something that's different than that, so let's assume that. Right. So when theta is zero, that's delta. Well, that then breaks out. Well, what is delta in this case? Is that? Not quite. So delta, right, is the displacement of the spring from its equilibrium. Right, so it's this distance. Right. And if we're really looking for the whole model, there actually is some vertical displacement there too. So we're going to make a few assumptions to get, we're going to think, hey, it's going to vibrate about some theta equals zero. Right. So the displacement of that guy from horizontal is basically, we can write this kind of intermediate point, let's call that x. If you kind of don't see why it would maybe something. Okay, so well, how does x deflect as a function of theta, right? Because that's the displacement of the spring now, that x displacement, right? Well, that displacement there is just this guy, right? So end up with that. Right, where the delta is a sine theta. Okay. So that gives us what we need to figure out moments. And I'll write it out at least this once. Cross with. So that's the first part. I'll bring the second part in the second set of square brackets. And all of that equals just doing those cross products. So we have minus ka squared sine theta cosine theta in the k direction, mgl sine theta in the k direction. Does that make sense physically so far, what we see? Yes? Why yes? Okay, so we have everything in the k direction. I guess that's the first piece of that, right? So all the rotations in the k direction, all those moments in the k direction, that has to be true if it's going to stay in the board. Okay. And then we look at those directions. Well, the spring force is kind of pushing one way and gravity is pushing opposite. That's going to make sense for us too. Oh, okay. So kind of is making some sense. What's the other side of this equation? Here. So that's the sum of the moments side. What does that all equal? So that's the F of F equals MA. What's the MA side of the rotational equivalent? Yeah, it's going to be something like that. Well, in this simple case, we have that. In planar case, you can almost always go there. Well, what's I naught? Let me erase that. What's the moment of inertia about 0.0 for this system? Which is what you're... Yeah, it's just a point mass in pure rotation, right? So that's I naught. What's alpha, the angular acceleration? Theta double dot. In what direction? It's a vector, remember? What direction? It's K. Yeah. So we have then and all of that is in the K direction. We can group our terms, pull them over to the left-hand side. I'll leave the K off. What can we say about this equation? It is nonlinear. Why? Yeah, it depends. We have kind of nonlinear dependence on what we're taking derivatives of, right? So, I have a nonlinear differential equation. We don't like to deal with those. We can avoid it. How can I get to a linear version? I can linearize this equation. Okay, so let's try to do that. So this is the full equation of motion, these guys. It's our full nonlinear equation of motion. I'm going to linearize this. What's the first choice I have to make? Yeah, about what point I want to linearize it. Remember, anything you linearize is only good around the point at which you did that linearization. What point kind of makes sense here? Theta equals zero, probably. Okay, so we're gonna linearize okay, and then we're gonna say, well, around theta equals zero, we're gonna further limit. We're gonna do that kind of simplest version of linearization and say, hey, let that angle around our equilibrium or our choice we're linearizing about be really small. So theta much less than 1. Well, what does that mean for the sine? All right. What does that mean for cosine? It's approximately 1. Okay. So we have then I'll leave them separate for now. Okay, there we have another form of this equation of motion. And we would say that's the linearized equation of motion. And we could even go a step further. So still just a different kind of grouping of the linearized equation of motion. Well, what do we know about that generally know about or think about this term in parentheses to be? Natural frequency. Square. Right. So generally, that's going to be true. Okay. What happens in this system? A little bit different than ones we've seen before. Happens, say, if that spring constant's really low. So, what we're saying, this can be written that way. That assumes something about what's inside this term. Right? Can MGL ever be larger than KA squared? Really? Why not? Yeah, it could be. We don't know anything about what K is. We don't know anything about what A is. We haven't said that. Right? What happens when MGL is larger than KA squared? That term's negative. Right? So if that is true, right, we have an equation that looks something like that, really. What do we know about equations of that form? The difference is here. All right, you guys have all had controls, most of you, overwhelming majority of you. What are the roots of that differential equation? What are the poles of that equation? Which side of the S-plane are they on? They have negative real positive parts and positive real parts. Positive. Positive, right. What does that mean for stability? Unstable. It's an unstable system. In terms of this guy, what does that mean? It means it falls over. So we need, for this system to be stable, we need K squared to be greater than MGL. And then we can figure out, get for a given A, exactly what K needs to be by just effectively solving that for that being greater than zero. And then we ensure that the system is stable and it remains upright all the time. Okay, that was Newton-Euler. Questions about that? Yes, sir.
What happens if they're the same and you get zero then?
If they're the same and you get zero, those guys exactly balance. Right? And you get theta dot zero. It sticks there forever. Okay. Right. And that is, in fact, what you would have at a non-zero equilibrium point somewhere. You'd have them balancing. Okay. You settle to that ever. You would balance to that place, basically. Right? And what would really happen is this part changes in that case. And of course, in reality, they're never exactly going to balance. So, okay. Questions about maybe the process of the going to that solution? Okay.
So we can linearize anything as long as we're told we can't. As long as we're not told not to.
In the context of the class or in context of life in general? quite often I'm going to ask you to linearize stuff. And quite often you will have to linearize in order to figure out natural frequency and damping ratio, which are going to tell you stuff about the response of the system. To answer the greater question, what about life? Depends. Right? This is a more accurate representation of that system as we drew it than the linearized version. Is that difference important to the particular application you're working on? Maybe it is, maybe it's not. So that's kind of a, you know, like I'll say a lot, this term, it depends. Okay, so I'm going to leave that side up. And let's take a look at least what it would have to, we'd have to do to set this up for Lagrange. So let's see, I can leave a lot of this stuff up. That part. me get rid of this part. So use Lagrange's method, Lagrange's equations. Okay. If we're going to do this with Lagrange, what do we need to figure out? Kinetic and potential energy. Okay. Let's start with kinetic. What's the kinetic energy of this system? And we can take that shortcut because we know it is in pure rotation. Okay. All right. Then we're going to need to know kinetic energy. Potential energy. What forms of potential do we have here? We have gravitational potential, spring potential. Let's look at the gravitational potential first. Someone actually mentioned earlier, we need to do something to set that up. What's that? Set a gravity datum. What's a good choice here? Where's somebody say it? The pin height, yes. So, let's call that our gravity datum. We didn't know our gravitational potential is what? MGH, and in this case, our mass, that height above the datum is L cosine theta. That's right. So MGH. What's the spring potential? So think maybe that first. That's where you're getting there. So we have K delta squared. Well, we figured out, hey, that delta was a sine theta before. All right. And then, now that we kind of used that, that's why I was leaving that up, so hinting at what we needed to do. And we can write the Lagrangian. So it's T minus V, so there's T. I'm going to run into that over there, I'm sorry. Sorry about that. There's Lagrangian, T minus V. Okay, now that I have that, what's next? Yeah, just plug in those terms. I know the equation of motion is going to be of this form then. So, do we need to do that math? It's in the notes. We need to do it? Okay. Partial with L with respect to theta dot. Yeah, so just leave, we can leave it as I naught to save us a little bit of writing. Just that, right? And then we take the total time derivative of that now. Is what? Well, we're assuming mass and L and everything's constant, so only thing changing there is theta. All right, now we need the partial Lagrangian with respect to theta. GL sine theta, right? And that's going to be And then we end up, our total equation is just this minus that. And that should match what we got on the other side. And it does. So we get the same equation of motion, which we better. No matter what method you use, you better get the same equation of motion. They're a property of the system itself, not the method you use to get there. And of course, once we have that equation of motion here, we could still do the same linearization stuff. Questions? Yes, sir. I don't want to say never, but I will never, maybe, never, tell you, hey, you have to work this Lagrange. So, again, I'm hesitant to say never, but I will never tell you which way you need to do it.
But there are some cases where it's easier.
There's some cases where it's going to be way easier to use Lagrange, and some cases where it's going to be better or easier to use Newton-Euler. Okay. So it's really to your advantage to know both. But I'm never going to dictate to you, you have to solve it this way. Yes, sir?
Can you find the natural frequency from a nonlinear
system? Strictly speaking, a nonlinear system does not have a natural frequency. Right. Natural frequency is a linear phenomenon. Other questions? Okay. So we worked Lagrange, and, well, what's kind of missing from Lagrange as we've seen it so far? Directions? That's going to depend on this. So we worked, to remind you, on Thursday, we only defined this for systems without external forces and without damping. So let's look at those next two pieces now. The damping one's going to be easy for the type of damping that we'll deal with in here at least. The external forces are going to seem way more complex than they actually are. Okay. And we're really going to talk until a bit later in the course. We're really only talking about what's called viscous damping. And the viscous damping is the force that is proportional to velocity. Right, that's a linear approximation of some type of damping. It's called viscous damping. All right, so we can say the force from the damper looks like that. And that delta, you have to figure out what that is in whatever coordinates you're working. The book has some time spinning out the derivation of how you get from this to the approximation we're going to use for that to include in the Lagrange method. I think we'll skip over that for now. Okay. What we're going to define is Rayleigh's dissipation function. And basically what we're doing is relying on kind of knowing, in some sense, the relationship between what that spring force, what a spring force looks like and what a damper looks like, the force from that damper. So we're going to define, hey, let's mimic what the spring looks like. Okay. So for every damper in your problem, you need to figure out this. Just like for every spring in your problem, you would need to figure out the potential energy from the spring using the 1/2 kx delta squared. Okay. And then Lagrange's, we basically just include this in Lagrange's method now. Total time derivative dl plus can do that where we have I. One to n for our n generalized coordinates. Right, so we take, look at all our dampers, define this guy, right, and this could be multiple dampers here. Right, and then you take the partial of that with respect to the generalized velocities. Okay, and again, you'll have n of these equations, one for each generalized coordinate that we have to solve. So that one's pretty easy. It's just basically kind of looking at the damper and figuring out what that anticipation function is and a little bit more math. Okay. Doesn't take a ton of analysis to do that. Notice, however, we still have no external forces. Okay, so let's look at how we're going to handle those with Lagrange's method. External forces. To get to external forces using Lagrange methods, we're going to use a method called virtual work. To understand what virtual work is, we have to understand virtual displacements. So let's talk about those first. Virtual displacement have a few properties. They are infinitesimally small. That's part of where the virtual comes in. So it's actually infinitesimally small motion. I'm sure I misspelled that. Infinitesimally. Maybe I got it right. Infinitesimally. Yeah, okay. Infinitely small of displacement. And at least partially because they're infinitesimally small, they occur in zero time. So I have some displacement in my system that's infinitesimally small and takes no time to do. Okay. And the third major point don't violate any kind of constraints on your system. So they're kinematically admissible motions, for example. Don't violate any system constraints. So we might have a constraint, and quite often you can write constraints in this form, that, hey, I have a function that describes my constraint that is a function of my generalized coordinates q1 to qn. And time equals some constant. So, for example, if I have a 4-bar linkage, I might have a constraint that says the length all the way around that quadrilateral is fixed. Right, that, you could write that in this functional form, is some length, depending on how you want to describe it. So if I'm going to look at virtual displacements, right, one way for us to do that is say, well, hey, I'm going to know I don't violate those constraints. I have Q1 plus a virtual displacement in Q1. And I do that for all of these guys. Qn plus virtual displacement in generalized coordinate n. And again, it took no time to do that, so the time is constant. Time hasn't changed, so our constraint is still satisfied. Okay. So this is effectively just summarizing those three points, this relationship. Okay. Why are these going to help us? Or how are these going to help us? Because we need to talk about virtual work. What's the high school physics understanding of work? Of work a force does?
Force times distance.
Okay. We know by now, hopefully it's a little bit more complex than that, But effectively what we're going to look at is force times virtual displacements gets us to virtual work. The virtual work is what's going to get us to the generalized forces acting on each generalized coordinate. How do we do that? Well, let's look at virtual work. So you'll see kind of that delta W for virtual work. And if we have J, external forces, you know, sum over all of those, force, I want to do RJ, not QJ. So I have J different external forces, and I'm just doing force times distance that gives me the work that force is doing. Right. So this delta RJ that's the virtual displacement of the point where that force is acting. And just hang with me for a minute. So that's from forces. We also have virtual work from moments. Okay. So if I have, let me match my notes, seeing small n, I have n different pure moments, pure torques acting on the system. And make sure you realize all of these are vectors. So you have to get the vectors right. These guys are dot products. Okay. So this delta theta is the virtual rotation, virtual displacement, angular displacement of the body on which this pure torque Mn is working. And we have n different ones of those because we can have n different bodies. Okay. We have J external forces. For every external force, F of J is acting at some point. We have the displacement, virtual displacement, delta RJ of that point. Are you with me at least with the terminology so far? What's going on? What we're going to see and what we're going to do is basically we're going to form that equation and then we're going to match it up to this. Where these capital Qs, once you basically form this, you're going to group terms according to your generalized coordinates now. And the coefficient matching the virtual displacement of each generalized coordinates is these capital Q terms, these are generalized forces. Okay. And there what's going to fill in to Lagrange's equation for us to give us what we need to know. So we form this guy, match up coefficients to figure out Q1, Q2 to Qn, and those coefficients are what goes on the right-hand side of the equation. And then we have Lagrange's equation, including linear viscous damping. Of course, we have spring forces and gravity. Those are conservative, so they've been part of the Lagrangian. And then we have external forces we're going to look at in terms of these QIs, which are called generalized forces. One way to think about these generalized forces, these capital QI things, is this is the component of these forces and moments that cause motion in that generalized coordinate. One sec. That makes some sense? Anybody follow that? Yes, sir.
Shouldn't that not be Q dot?
That should not be Q dot. Same thing? Yeah, thank you. Okay, so again, one way, and I don't know if it's strictly correct, but one way to kind of develop some intuition about what these capital Qs are is this is the kind of component of these forces and moments just creating motion in this direction of that generalized coordinate. And this process allows us to kind of break out those component by component. think this will make some more sense with an example. So let's do that. I'm going to come back over here, I think, so I can have the table to work off of. And I'll leave that part up. Yeah, we'll leave that. Okay, so let's look at an example. This example that we're getting ready to work is kind of a combination of examples 1.14 and 1.15 in your book. And we're going to make at least one choice differently than the book does. And so you'll have kind of two paths to the same solution. Very minor difference, but you'll see it works both ways. We are going to have a spring attached to a mass on a frictionless surface. Spring is a spring constant K. It's attached from the mass to ground. We'll describe the displacement of that mass from the spring's equilibrium length as x. And let's call that mass M1. And then we have massless inextensible rod of length L, the end of which is a point mass we'll call M. Okay. On that point mass, there is a always horizontal force, F. We'll describe it as the rotation of that guy from vertical as theta. And of course we have gravity. Okay. How many degrees of freedom does this system have? I hear two. Everybody agree with two? Good, I agree with that as well. What does that mean about how many generalized coordinates we need? And two, which means we have how many equations of motion? Two, good. All right, so we want to get to those equations of motion. That's my first step. I've got a free body diagram. That's good. What kind of forces do I have? Gravity where? On what? What is it? Gravity on both. M1g. Mg. Okay. What else? Some kind of normal force on M1. What else? Spring force on M1. I have the applied force. I have some kind of reaction forces at the pen, right? And we have some kind of equal but opposite thing going on. Right, maybe we could call those maybe Rx. Sorry, a little bit small. No, apologize for that. Rx, Ry. And those are equal and opposite. Okay, what's next? Define some kind of coordinate system. That's a good idea. What might make sense here? Some kind of coordinate system somewhere around the pen. Why would we maybe not want to use the pen itself as the origin?
So it's moving.
It's moving. Right? So we could define a system there. No problem. We just have to remember that it's moving, and that's going to complicate things a little bit. Okay. So I'm just going to define a generic fixed Newtonian frame out here somewhere. XY. That's going to give me this theta as we've drawn it, being in a positive k. All right. What's next? Well, we said we had two generalized coordinates, so we're going to need two generalized coordinates. What's a good choice? X and theta. Yeah, you've kind of... not a bad choice. Okay. Now, let's work through this on Lagrange. Why would this be a real pain, Newton-Euler? Yeah, I can't sum moments about this point because it's not in pure rotation about that point. Right? That point is moving. Right? So I'm going to have to figure out and include Rx and Ry, Rx and Ry in those equations of motion. That's a real pain. So this is a good example of knowing both methods. I'm going to look at this and say, I don't want to know what those are. I don't really even care what they are. To get to kind of overall general equations of motion for the system, Lagrange makes more sense. So I get to ignore those. So I'm going to use Lagrange. That means I need to know total kinetic energy of this system. Okay. What is the total kinetic energy of this system? Some translation, some rotation. How many different bodies do I have? Two, right? So I got to consider all that. Well, take it piece by piece. Okay. What's the total kinetic energy of M1? I have 1/2 M1x dot squared. Right. If we assume it's moving just horizontal, which is kind of what we're doing. Okay. So that's kind of the M1 component of kinetic energy. Okay. How about M? So there's one vote, ML squared theta dot squared. Why is that not complete? Why is that enough? Yeah, it's not in pure rotation about that point. So that way, if this was fixed pendulum like the problem we kind of just worked, then yeah, it gives you all the energy you need. Right? But we're not in pure rotation here. Okay, so if we can't see it right away, let's just write this. You know it's going to be that. It's just a point mass, right? So it doesn't actually have... not a rigid body that has rotational components unless we're in pure rotation about something, right? So we have 1/2 m, and it's vm, the velocity of that mass dotted with itself. Right? This is 1/2 of mv squared, effectively the vector form of it. So now we just have to figure out what's the total velocity of that point mass at the end. Okay, what's the total velocity of that point mass at the end? How can I get to that? Well, one way is to take and say, well, from kind of x is 0 equilibrium, what's the position from that to a random displacement in x out to the point, and then take the total time derivative. Right. But you could also see, well, hey, that's really, if I look at this system, I really know that is true. Right? If I consider this, if this was fixed and in pure rotation, right, the velocity here, velocity of point M, is always in that B1, the tangential direction, and it is L theta dot in that direction. So I have to get this back all into the same frame, though. Well, what is that B1? That B1 unit vector in terms of I and J. Maybe if I draw it this way, So I have x and y. B1, B2, and then that angle there is theta. So then what is just that, right? So then I know velocity of that point mass at the end of that pendulum thing there is that, where it's x dot plus L theta dot cosine theta in the I direction, x theta dot sine theta in the J direction. Does that make some physical sense? That's the check. Okay, well, yeah, you kind of feel like the total velocity of this should depend on how fast this thing is moving, and then also what the angular velocity of this is. Yeah, okay, it's kind of a good hint that it makes some sense physically. Okay. So to get the total kinetic energy, we need to dot this with itself, which is effectively just squaring those two terms, right? And you can collect. That full dot product and everything is in the notes. But I want to make sure we get to at least talk about the virtual work, since we're here on it, and we got 10-ish minutes left. We can, at a high level, what kind of potential energy do I have? Spring and gravity, right? So what's the spring potential? Okay, delta squared, and in this case we said that delta squared is just x. If we're talking about the gravitational potential, what do we need to do? Set a datum. Let's pick here. Okay. The book in this problem picks down here. So that's the one difference, really, where we're looking at this compared to the book. So they pick the lowest point of the pendulum. We're picking the pen height. So for us, it's mgh, where h is the distance above the datum. So what's our h? Positive or negative? Negative, because it's below the datum. Okay. So there we have at least the components, if once we do all the math out of our Lagrangian. And now let's look at the virtual work. We need to get to the kind of right-hand side, the forcing part of those equations of motion. Okay. And we see that what we want to write, we only have one non-conservative external force. So we know in our case, our virtual work is going to be f. F is always in the I direction. And we want to dot it with the displacement of the point at which it's applied. Right? So for us, that's just the mass, right? So it's dotted with, let's say, the position of how that mass moves. Okay. So then what we have to do, really, and we can write the other side. We need to figure this out. And then we're going to match up terms to figure out what Q1 and Q2 are. So, x was small Q1, our first generalized coordinate. Theta was our second generalized coordinate. So, Q1, Q2. Okay. So then the question is, well, how do we get to what the virtual displacement of that point at which our forces are acting? The trick really is actually to look at the velocity of those points. So I can take a look at the velocity of that point. I'm going to go over here. And we said the velocity of that point looked like this. In those I and J directions. method here, the shortcut that's going to work for you, is just to take each one of these total time derivatives that are in that velocity, right, and realize that they are just the displacement over time. Right? So this is dx dt. It's d theta dt. Right? But we said our virtual displacements happen in zero time. Right? So that dt starts shrinking towards zero, what we really end up with is just the d part. Take each one of those total time derivatives of your generalized coordinates and replace them with corresponding virtual displacement. So we have the velocity of that point. We know it's virtual displacement then. We take each one of those time derivatives. So the x dot goes to virtual displacement in x. Theta dot goes to virtual displacement in theta. All right? Look at this dot product. Right? So we only have force in I dot I, we end up with F dx, FL those terms. We take F as in the I direction, dot it with rotational displacement of where it's being applied. Right? You end up with F times dx, FL cosine theta, rotational displacement in theta. Well, then we know Q1, our first generalized force, the part that will be, become part of the x equation using Lagrange's method, is just F. Okay. So I'd have F over here for the x equation. Okay. For the theta equation, I know Q2, I just match up terms. It's FL cosine theta. So the right-hand side of that theta equation is FL cosine theta. Do those two things make sense physically? Those are the forcing kind of components of that force acting in those two generalized coordinates. Yes? No? Those of you that are nodding yes, why? Well, how does this... X is that direction, F is that direction. How do you think F affects F? Or F affects X, sorry. Yeah, it's same direction and it kind of ends up applying directly. Right? Yeah, okay, that F ends up on the right-hand side. Okay. What component of this makes theta larger? F times L cosine theta. So you end up with two equations of motion. We have all the components. We just haven't done the math to fill them in. We'll at least write out the form of those equations of motion. I'm just going to take and actually do the math out, which will be in the notes for you. And then I have two equations of motion to describe my 2-degree of freedom system. And like I said, the notes, and then I've worked out that for you too. So I'll include that in the notes as well. Questions? I think that is a good place to stop for today. See you guys on Thursday.